There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Greg Horlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, which is, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, which includes which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are bad, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. That is the Ringer NFL Draft Show. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
This episode of The Town is brought to you by FX's The Bear, starring Jeremy Allen White, Ayo Edebiri, and Eben Moss-Bachrach. Season 2 follows as the crew work to transform their grimy sandwich joint into a next-level spot. It turns out the only thing harder than running a restaurant is opening a new one. Television Academy members can watch all episodes at fxnetworks.com/FYC.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
It is Monday, April 1st. This Wednesday is a pretty special day for the Walt Disney Company. It's the annual shareholder meeting. I'm sure, like Craig and I, you'll be wearing your Mickey hat all day to celebrate. This year is the culmination of the proxy battle that investor Nelson Peltz has been waging against the company and its CEO, Bob Iger. I've been writing a lot about this in my Puck newsletter, but to sum it up, Peltz, the billionaire corporate raider and investor at Trian Partners, has teamed up with Ike Perlmutter, the fired Marvel executive and a major Disney shareholder, to try to put Peltz and another disgruntled former Disney executive, Jay Rasulo, on the board of directors. Peltz has no experience in entertainment, has never been on an entertainment company's board, and is 81 years old, but he's got ideas. And mostly he's upset that the Disney stock is trading at about $120 a share, down from nearly $200 at the height of the streaming wars 3 years ago, but up about 30% this year. That's a key factor for Iger. Peltz says he's got a plan to help get Disney back on track, give it a Netflix-like earnings in streaming, figure out the path for ESPN, and specifically to help the CEO succession problem, figure out who should replace Iger in 2026. In a media blitz lately, Peltz has questioned everything from Iger's decision to buy most of Fox to why Disney made the Black Panther movies with all Black people. Yes, that actually happened. Iger and the Disney board have responded by announcing a bunch of new initiatives, like combining Hulu and Disney Plus, cutting billions of dollars in costs, making less content at Marvel, investing in the maker of Fortnite, announcing a Moana sequel, much more. Peltz seemed kind of dead in this fight until last week, when the influential shareholder advisory firm ISS backed Peltz, though not Rasulo, interestingly. And CalPERS, the pension fund, also backed the Trian guys. They're a big deal, and those are big endorsements. Though Disney is a weird company because up to 40% of its shareholders are so-called retail investors, regular people, not institutional. Lots of kids who got some Disney shares from grandma and people who care a lot about the brand. That's why Disney has reportedly spent more than $40 million on outreach via emails and phone calls to shareholders and advertising, including on this podcast, to try to reach and sway those shareholders. It's all setting up a dramatic meeting on Wednesday with some big implications for the company. That's what we're getting into today with Lucas Shaw, our Monday guy. Could Nelson Peltz actually win this thing? And if he does, what happens to Disney? From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. All right, we are here with Lucas Shaw from Bloomberg. Welcome, Lucas.
Great to be here. We have both survived opening day.
Yeah, I know we're not hitting the panic button on Ohtani quite yet. Not performing as promised, but he's got time. All right, so here we are. It's been months in the making. Finally, the Disney shareholder vote. Nelson Peltz gets his day of reckoning. And up until a week or two ago, I was pretty confident that Disney was going to clamp this down and Iger was going to stomp all over this guy. Now I'm less sure. I still think Disney is going to win, or the Disney slate is going to win. But after seeing some of the developments this past week, first with the ISS shareholder advisory firm, and now with the CalPERS pension fund announcement. I mean, their statement was pretty clear. CalPERS believes Walt Disney Company will benefit from fresh eyes on its board of directors and voted its company shares in favor of candidates Nelson Peltz and Jay Rasulo. That's 6.65 million shares. That's not insignificant.
Two shareholder advisory firms backing Peltz, as well as one of the major shareholder, is a blow to Iger's candidacy. I, like you, thought that this was sort of a sure thing a few weeks ago. I still think that Disney's got the management has the edge, but it's not nearly as sure thing as it was. And they're probably a little bit nervous about this.
They've got to be. Because, I mean, look at this, what they've done over the past 6 months. I mean, the stock is way up in that time. Disney had a very favorable earnings reveal for the first quarter. They announced a whole bunch of new stuff. They're investing in Fortnite. They're investing in Moana 2. They got Taylor Swift's concert film, although the numbers on that were a little underwhelming.
Can I say something about that, though? So
yeah,
here's the thing. None of those announcements really meant very much. It was very effective from a publicity and narrative perspective, but it doesn't address the underlying issue.
Of course, but this is a company that is up to 40% owned by individual shareholders. That means mom and pop and cousin Susie, who got some stock for her birthday and held onto it for 20 years. That's who that is aimed at. People who have a connection to this brand and they want to motivate to come out and vote in this shareholder vote.
Sure. If you look at the company through sort of an unvarnished, unbiased set of eyes, Iger and the board are in a relatively weak position.
So explain that. Explain your take here. You told me you just looked at the Restore the Magic deck again. And are you convinced? Are you convinced? Would you vote for these guys?
I don't have a vote. You're not getting me to jump in on that one. But what I'll say is...
But give me the argument.
The argument for Peltz would be, look, sure, the stock is up this year, but that's only after 2 or 3 years of decline. It's based over 5 years, basically flat. If you go back 3 years, it's way down. The TV network business is shrinking. The streaming business is barely growing. And in terms of subscribers, it's not. It's growing in revenue because they increase prices. The only thing going for the company right now is theme parks. If not for theme parks, Disney would be in the similar boat, not the same boat, as Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount, where it's basically a kind of traditional entertainment company where okay. The TV business
is
flapping.
But that's like saying without the iPhone, Apple would be, you know, whatever.
Well, not exactly, because the core engine for Disney is still that creative engine that we, as you and I have talked about repeatedly, has not been doing very well for the last 18 to 24 months. They've won people over with a lot of shiny announcements, but the only thing that could meaningfully change the trajectory of the company in the near term is this sports streaming service, which nobody seems to believe in. And by the way, Disney's pursuing that at the same time that it's creating its own ESPN flagship, whatever you want to call it, streaming service. Then you add in that the board has failed at succession. You add in the fact that the Fox deal looks not great to a lot of people. And the thing that they have going for them is basically Iger does seem to have regained his swagger. That's not a technical thing, but it's just a sense that Nelson Peltz and Jay Rasulo haven't really offered any meaningful solutions. The company's already doing a lot of what they want. And that changing leadership again is destabilizing at a time where the company doesn't need any of that. But I understand why there are people agitating for change. There are a lot of things the company has done wrong. I'm just not sure that it's a positive outcome causing more turmoil at the company.
Well, all of these challenges you are mentioning are not specific to Disney. They are industry-wide challenges, and we know this because we talk about them ad nauseum on this show and in what we write. So to cite Disney as like some kind of problematic company when the entire industry is sort of on fire right now is a little bit of a stretch.
I kind of disagree with that on two fronts. One is that there is something specific to Disney, which is that the succession one is specific to Disney.
Well, I was going to get to that, so keep going.
The other thing I'd say is you're correct that these are secular industry challenges, but if you look at Paramount, people have been very critical of their leadership. If you look at Warner Brothers Discovery, people have been very critical of their leadership. What you've seen is an industry that did face this kind of this big shift in the business, and not a single one of those leaders has effectively responded to it.
And you can say that that means you're essentially forgiving the CEOs of all of these companies.
No, I'm not. I'm not at all. I'm just saying that for someone like Peltz to argue that Bob Iger and the leadership of Disney has made some unique mistakes is not accurate, because these mistakes have occurred across the industry.
That is true.
The succession one is the big one. And I ultimately think that if these institutional investors vote for Peltz, it is a rebuke of Iger and his failure to find a successor. Because we should not even be talking about Iger right now. We should be talking about the properly groomed, properly prepared, properly installed successor to Iger that is dealing with all of these problems with fresh set of eyes and a true CEO background. And Iger and the board couldn't deliver that with Bob Chapek. So I think if he loses, it is a largely succession-based loss.
Yeah, I mean, Iger should be on a yacht with David Geffen and whoever else he wants to be on a yacht with.
Oprah.
Right now.
He likes Oprah. The yacht with Oprah.
That's okay. That's good to know. I know you are an avid follower of who's on whose yacht.
I do, although it's bummer because my main source used to be David Geffen's Instagram, but he has gone AWOL on that after people made fun of him during the pandemic.
Do you think that Iger and Elon would yacht together?
I do not. No, I think that's personal. I believe that Elon telling him to go fuck yourself is probably a friendship ender.
Yeah.
Although, interestingly, Elon has not been a big force in this proxy battle. You'd think he'd be on Twitter every day talking about how everyone should back Nelson Peltz. Now, he did reply to one tweet saying that, the Disney shareholders have not been properly served by the leadership. And he did pop up, I learned, in the New York Times at the premiere of Nelson Peltz's daughter Nicola Peltz. He went to her movie premiere.
They were on the red carpet together.
I don't know why. Maybe they're friendly, but he has not been a factor in this. And I think, if the argument against Disney is in part based on this sort of woke mind virus argument that you see, you think Elon would be out there talking about how they should shake up the board.
He did tweet about Disney this morning.
Oh, he did? What did he say?
He said, excited to join Disney as their chief DEI officer. Can't wait to work with Bob Iger and Kathleen Kennedy to make their content even more woke. Even the linguine. I don't get the linguine thing, but
that is a lame April Fool's. Lame. Whatever. But that doesn't specifically talk about this fight. He's talking about the whole Gina Carano thing. He's backing her lawsuit over being fired for her views. So, yeah.
But he went after your favorite punching bag.
He did, yeah. But Kathy Kennedy is not, that whole South Park thing was sort of, it was funny, but it wasn't accurate. Like within the Disney, she's not known as the like woke warrior. She kind of has to be convinced, from everything I've been told, she has to kind of be convinced to do this stuff. And there's still never been a female director of a Star Wars movie. I'm very critical of Kathy Kennedy, but I don't think that she's gone overboard on the diversity stuff.
Yeah. Well, maybe Nelson told him that it was better if he didn't get involved, or Elon just realized that he's got 10 other more pressing things to do.
Well, that gets to the distraction question, because fighting all of this, not only spending tens of millions of dollars to fend off Nelson Peltz and have your people calling investors and putting out press releases and sort of taking your mind away from the actual pressing problems that Disney is facing. I think this is a big distraction. I think that this is kind of a singular focus. Bob cares very much about his image, and this would be a huge black eye if he loses this.
I mean, this is existential.
Yeah. Fighting this has been a distraction. They can say, oh, we're 100% focused on our transformation, whatever. No. Last couple of weeks, they are 100% focused on this.
Yeah. Well, and I think the people immediately around Bob, the C-suite, his top lawyer, top spokespeople, investor relations, all those folks, they're spending the majority of their time on this. They have to be. Because if they lose this, it changes the company pretty dramatically. And it's the top priority for Bob is winning it.
Right, exactly. And they take their cues from him.
It's very destabilizing.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
What does this mean if Peltz wins? If he gets himself and perhaps himself and Jay Rizzullo on the board, what I've seen some speculation that Iger would take himself off the board if that happened. I don't think that's going to happen. But what do you think will be the immediate effect if Peltz gets on the board?
If Peltz wins, I think the company continues to do what it's already been doing, just maybe faster and with some slight changes, right? Like they maybe move up ESPN D2C, or they only do one of those sports direct to consumer. If you read what Peltz has said, it seems like he's interested in them trying to sell their non-sports TV networks. Bob Iger explored that. There's a reason they didn't do it. They probably take Succession seriously, but they already are. They, you know, all the things that Peltz and Rizzullo have proposed, Disney has either explored or is doing for the most part. So I don't know that much changes. If you read the coverage of what's happened with Peltz in other places, even folks who say that he was a positive impact said that he didn't really bring in like a bunch of new ideas. He just made them do what they were already doing kind of faster. The question to me is, it's a huge blow to Iger if Peltz wins. It amounts in a lot of ways to a vote of no confidence in the leader. And so does he decide to leave the company? Does he stick around?
I don't think he would leave the company. I think that would be a betrayal of sorts. He came back to do a job. He has his sunset in 2026. And to leave the company over losing a shareholder vote like this would sort of seem like he's a pouty little boy who's going to stomp his feet and go to his room because he doesn't like what his mommy says.
Yeah. Did you listen to a conversation that your friend Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway had about this a couple of weeks ago?
I did. They talked about Disney a couple times, but which one?
At least on this occasion that I heard it, I thought Scott made an interesting argument, which was he said that this was ultimately a matter of two guys with big egos who needed to just bury the hatchet. Iger should welcome Peltz in, let him take credit, surrender his ego, and just neutralize the situation.
Yeah, I've seen that argument, and that could still happen. I mean, there's nothing to say that there can't be a last-minute settlement where, you know, right before the vote on Wednesday, they agree to let Peltz on the board and not Rizzullo, or maybe other way around, although I think Peltz probably wants it for himself.
Right.
Even after the vote, even if Peltz doesn't win, if he gets a significant share of the vote, they could look at that and say, listen, the shareholders have spoken here. There is demand for some new blood on this board. So let's just put him on anyways. This will all go away. We want to deal with this in the future. And now it's on him, too. He's now invested in what we do. There's a scenario where that happens.
Yeah, it's the argument for a compromise, basically, rather than fight.
Yeah. I mean, look what Iger just did in Florida, where he felt very strongly they had a great case against DeSantis and what they were doing with the Reedy Creek or the improvement district around Disney World. But he knew that for the betterment of this proxy fight, if there are people out there that don't like him fighting with Florida over the politics issue, that settling that now and getting out of that is going to ultimately be a positive for the company, even though his ego might take a little bit of a bruising because DeSantis can go on TV and talk about how he won against Disney.
Right. And do you think that if they, this is obviously a hypothetical, but let's say Disney wins the proxy fight, but Peltz gets 42% of the vote. and Iger decides to put Peltz on the board, but not Rasullo. Even though that's a compromise, do you think that gets treated like a Peltz win?
Yeah, probably. Because, I mean, this is personal. This is not just Peltz.
It's Ike Perlmutter.
This is Ike sitting in the background saying, F you, you kicked me out of the company, I brought you Marvel. And they sit there in Florida and stew about how awful the Disney people are. And vice versa. Bob wrote his book about how much he disliked Ike. So that, I think, would be considered a win for Peltz. And the question I have about Peltz also is what he would do as an agitator within the company. Because he's been doing the media rounds talking about how he's not here to overrule Bob Iger or to question him. He likes Bob Iger. He likes Disney. But the reality is very different. I mean, my colleague at Puck, Bill Cohan, has written about that, where Peltz in the past, when he gets on boards, he was responsible for firing the CEO at GE and replacing him with a guy, John Flannery, who was then fired by the Peltz board. And he did the same thing at DuPont, where he sort of lost the proxy war, but ended up getting what he wanted, which was the CEO was out at DuPont. So I don't believe him when he says he will be this benevolent, passive board member. I think he will be very critical of Iger and will not be afraid of challenging him, which I don't think Iger has had on that board, maybe ever, but certainly not in a long time.
If you were a common shareholder and you saw all the different things that Disney has done over the last 12, 13 months, would your response be that they are already doing something and this guy needs to go away?
Yeah, I would. First of all, if I'm a common shareholder of Disney, there's no one I trust more than Bob Iger. Honestly, like some outsider, Nelson Peltz, think about it. If you're not following this, you know Bob Iger. You know what he has done over the past 20 years. Now, obviously, he came back to the company and it has not been quite the same as it was before. And he failed on succession. But I don't think the average shareholder cares as much about succession as institutional shareholders who know how big a deal it is. You and I who cover this stuff, who know that this is part of the job as a successful executive, is to groom and select a successor. I think the average shareholder knows Bob Iger. I mean, the goal here is to get them to vote in the first place. Most retail investors in shareholder fights don't even vote. I mean, that's why they've been running all these ads and doing all this outreach and trying to motivate these shareholders to vote, because most don't.
Yeah. Do you feel conflicted because of the ads run on your podcast?
I do. I feel conflicted because they're so cheesy.
I think we have ads on our website too.
They're everywhere. And at least, they pay me to put it in my own voice. I had to read that ad. Although when I read ads, I'm pretty much like Ron Burgundy. You could put Go Fuck Yourself San Diego on there and I would probably read it. All right. So I'm going to put you on the spot here. What percentage chance does Peltz have of getting on the Disney board? Either through the vote or through getting enough of the vote to pressure Disney to put him on.
I'm going to say it's between 25 and 50. I would still bet against it, but it's not a long shot. I'd say somewhere in the 30 to 40% range, only because, look, I still think Disney wins the proxy fight. And if that happens, Iger has made it clear, to your point, that this is personal and existential for him, and he doesn't want this guy and Ike anywhere near the board. At the same time, he's kicked up enough of a fuss. There's just, in general, like enough frustration with the performance of all of these companies that, you know, he's probably going to get at least a decent percentage of the vote. Maybe it's too high. Maybe I should say 20 to 30%.
The correct answer is 20% chance.
Yeah.
According to me, I think there's a 20% chance he gets on the board. The other question, though, is does this end here? Like, let's say Disney wins. They don't put either of those guys on the board. Do they go away?
I think it's hard to lose the vote and keep at it.
What else do they got to do? The dude's 81. He and Ike are like playing Mahjong in Palm Beach. What else are they going to do?
Make money in another way. I don't know. Look, the performance...
Go to Wendy's. He's on the board of Wendy's. He could go to Wendy's and have a Frosty every day.
The performance of the company is going to continue to be challenge for a little while because of all the secular trends we've talked about. So they could certainly hang around the cup and keep fighting for more. But I think if Iger wins this one, after all of the energy that both sides put into it, Peltz is going to have to back down.
Yeah, and we will see on the second quarter earnings call whether the momentum is continuing. There was a B of A analyst report by Jessica Reif Ehrlich today that was pretty positive. She said, since returning as CEO in November 22, Bob Iger now appears to be in command and control and on a growth offensive. And she predicted a big increase in Disney Plus subs due to the charter deal and some other content-related things, at least in the U.S. And if this momentum continues positively, maybe he does put this to bed.
Yeah, I imagine that the timing of that B of A note was not coincidental.
Are you suggesting that Disney wanted her to put that out right before the vote?
But we'll see. I mean, the response to the company's performance this year has been strong. The response to Iger, who looked a little bit uncertain and a little bit shaky in his first 6 to 12 months back on the job, it's been far more positive. And if they can continue that, they're in a good situation. And look, I do think that for all the criticism that is warranted around succession, that there is something about Iger and the belief in him and his track record that gives them a better chance of surviving this than other executives would have. I was talking with another kind of big deal in the space, and they were arguing that if there was someone else in charge of Disney, the odds of Peltz winning would be much better than 20-30%.
Oh, I agree. And that has to do with what I said, with the retail shareholders, these individual investors who aren't following this necessarily day to day.
I don't think it's just them, though. I don't know that another CEO pulls out the Jamie Dimon and George Lucas and all that. I don't know that another person gets some of the institutional investors' support.
Yeah. Don't forget Professor Ludwig von Drake, Donald Duck's uncle, who is urging people to vote the Disney slate.
I could never. Or does another CEO get the support of the entire Disney family?
Yeah, no, that was a huge deal, including Abigail, who hates his guts.
Yeah,
I think that's a big deal. And I think that that's what you get when you have the track record of a career at the company and 20 something years in that role.
Yeah, look, he's very, very good at the political side of this, which is why I have to believe that if he wins, he will find a way to just put this to bed.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will see. Big day coming up.
Are you going to do an emergency pod Wednesday if he wins or loses?
Well, not if he wins. If Disney wins, no emergency pod. But Craig, are we going to do something if Disney loses? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe we'll go live.
Maybe we'll do it live. We'll have Rich Greenfield in here and he can shit on Disney for 25 minutes.
I need you walking, taping yourself on Instagram like Bill Simmons and like your Puck colleagues have all started to do.
I do not do that. My walks are my private time, so I do not do Instagram videos, but more power to them. Good for them. All right, Lucas, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Matt.
We are back with the call sheet. Greg, are you happy now? Godzilla versus Kong 2, $80 million weekend. Probably never been more wrong in any of my box office predictions, at least in my newsletter. I backtracked on the show on Friday.
I was going to say, what are you talking about? This is a win for you. You took the over on Friday.
Yeah, it is. It is a win for me. Yeah, huge beat on the tracking. Did almost 200 million worldwide in its first weekend, including huge in China.
Yeah, this is the first movie in my box office draft team. So I'm excited. A hot start for me.
It is a hot start, especially since you've got the scraps that Lucas and I did not pick up in our draft. But unfortunately, despite the big weekend, the first quarter of 2024 is over, and the number's not great for the box office. First quarter year to date, we are now down 40% compared to pre-pandemic levels. That's the average of 2017, 2018, and 2019. And we are down 12% compared to last year at the domestic box office. So this is a reflection of the lack of titles.
Right.
There just haven't been as many big movies.
But it does feel like the movies that have come out, your Dunes, Ghostbusters, Kung Fu Panda, and now Godzilla, Kong, all of those movies have done well and exceeded expectations. I guess Argyle was a flop.
Madam Web, big bomb. And January was brutal. There were some hits like Mean Girls and You know, the Bob Marley movie did okay, but that's not enough. There needs to be, you know, a big Marvel movie in the first quarter. There needs to be a
There's not going to be big Marvel movies in any quarter anymore. No.
Well, that's my prediction today. My prediction is it's actually going to get worse in the second quarter of this year, because I'm looking at the calendar and it's not great. Like, there are a few that are going to be big. I actually think The Fall Guy will do okay. And April looks pretty brutal. There isn't a Super Mario Brothers like last year. We're looking at smaller titles like The First Omen and Civil War, the A24 movie. May, like I said, with Fall Guy, it does get a little better. And then we start to roll into some of the big summer plays.
May has Fall Guy. It has Furiosa. It has the Ryan Reynolds, John Krasinski movie, If, Planet of the Apes, Garfield.
I think Garfield will be big, but those are all risks. Those are not pre-branded $250 million huge swings.
Furiosa and Planet of the Apes are more guaranteed.
Are they, though? I mean, they're aging franchises that I think the studios are hoping they do okay, but like, I didn't pick up either of those movies. We left them both for you.
So even if the overall numbers are down, don't you think a lot of these movies, because of the lack of competition, might actually succeed?
They may do better than they would have done if they were up against
Marvel.
It's an
uncrowded market right now.
Yeah, it's relatively uncrowded, but it's still, you got to show up and you got to perform. And I don't know that you're going to see a Furiosa get to $1 billion. I mean, none of these movies are going to get to $1 billion.
I like when movies are not considered guaranteed hits going in.
You like it, but you know who doesn't like it? The people who own the theaters, especially, and even the studios don't like it. So the theaters are headed for a rough spot. I wouldn't be surprised if we see another bankruptcy out of either Regal or AMC. AMC has fended it off so far. Regal, we'll see if they have to do it again. But yeah, it's going to be tough before it gets better. All right. On that depressing note, that's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, Lucas Shaw, producer Craig Horlbeck, our editor, Jesse Lopez. And I want to thank you. We will see you later this week.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.